Hey, what's up, everybody? Sarah here. In this podcast, we're going to be talking about what financial planning is going to be looking like in 10 years. And I've got John Anderson of SEI with me today. Woohoo! John.
Thanks for having me, Sarah. Looking forward to having this conversation.
Yeah. So, hey, everyone. Look, I know it's a crazy time and it's strange to think about having a conversation about what the profession is going to look like in 10 years. But I promise you, there are themes that are really relevant to the short term. Right now, it's April 1st, 2020, and we're in the midst of the coronavirus. Market is volatile and whipsawing. But everybody, there are some great lessons in here if you could just hang on and listen to the show. So, John, I know this is something, a theme that you talk a lot about, what the profession is going to look like in 10 years. Where did the impetus for this discussion come from?
Sure. Thanks. Well, first of all, again, thanks for having me here. I'm thrilled to be a part of this podcast. And even more importantly, I think the conversation that we're going to have today is absolutely relevant today, because everything I talked about that's going to happen by 2030, I think is being accelerated. So I'm really looking forward to this conversation. But let me step back a little bit. About a year ago, last week, I think it was, I was having this conversation with a number of members from the FPA. And one of the things we were talking about is kind of this future of the industry. As we look around, we look at, for example, the retail market. You know, more malls and more stores were closing in 2019 than closed in 2008 and 2009. We saw this dramatic shift. The consumer is now empowered to go online to look for any size, shape, manufacturer, quantity, color. We're looking at this empowered consumer, and we started thinking about how is that going to affect the advisory business? Because we're training consumers to go online. We're training consumers to think about pricing options and to think about quality and to think about getting things at their way. And our business, the advisor business, tends to be very advisor centric rather than consumer focused. So what we started to do is kind of think about how can we find a look into the future to say, what does a client centric business look like? What does a consumer focused business look like in the advisory world? So we did a survey we did nine what we called forward-thinking financial advisory firms, handpicked by the FPA. We then did an online survey with advisors. I think there were somewhere around 450 advisors that worked on the survey. And we came out with this paper in October of 2019 called Advisory Firms 2030, The Innovation Imperative. And what we wanted to look at in that paper is to say, number one, let's take a look at the current market. How are advisors focusing on the future, and then take a look at the future and to say, what's going to happen to that business? What does it look like? And as I said, today, I think it's even more relevant because we're being pushed into that advisory firm of 2030 right now with the ability of advisors working at home, with creating workflows, with using technology. It's a very interesting time.
So how will financial planning change the client experience?
Well, I think, you know, it's changing now. What we looked at in the paper was we first took a look at where advisors are today. One of the first things we asked is, are they in fact planning? Are they planning for the future? Surprisingly, a majority of advisors don't have a business plan. They may have a growth plan. They may have a couple of tactics that they use, but they really have no lookout into the future to say, what does this business look like and how can I focus on that? They don't do segmentation. If they do segmentation, I shouldn't say that. They don't do segmentation based on consumer needs. They do segmentation based on their needs. You know, I love to talk about segmentation. I talk about it on a regular basis, but I always think that segmentation is taught backwards. They think about AUM or revenue per client. They don't think about what's important to the client. If we start segment based on what's important to the client instead of what's important to the consumer, we have a whole new look at the business. We have a whole new look at opportunities in the business. We have a whole new look at the clients and what their needs are. We can talk about pricing. We can talk about service models. We can talk about use of technology. But when I think about that way that the business looks today, again, it's very, very advisor driven, even down to things like planning and technology. In fact, 93% of advisors, if I remember the statistic right, still meet with their clients almost exclusively in their offices, forcing the consumer to come to their office. And, you know, you think about it, I talked about stores closing. I talked about malls closing. In retail environment, people were forcing to go to malls and stores instead of going to shop where they're most comfortable. And I think this is kind of that accelerated change that we're starting to see. So that's kind of where we saw advisor firms happening today, kind of in focus. So then we look at kind of the future state. of the business and kind of what our planners thinking about the profession. What are they doing now to prepare? We ask them if it's easier or harder to grow in the future. Looking at their technology, looking at their human resources, how are they evolving? And as we started to dig into that, what we found for the most part is that while advisors have goals, they don't necessarily have plans. So for example, we asked the planners to rank business goals, and we all talked about growth and AUM and adopting workflows and things like that. But for the most part, what we found is that they didn't necessarily use the new tactics, for example, that may be out there. So what I'm basically saying is we asked them, where is growth going to come from? And unbelievably, the survey that came back was that I could have answered this 10 years ago or 15 years ago. They talked about client referrals. They talked about centers of influence. They talked about educational events. And they really didn't take into consideration, again, this changing consumer. They didn't take into consideration new markets, specifically around specialization or, for example, millennials. We found very, very few people suggested they were going to grow their business by expanding the services that they put into place, which I was kind of surprised with. What we heard from them in survey after survey is that they do intend to customize client experiences based on specific needs, that the clients are going to have different needs, so they're going to evolve with them, but they were more reactive instead of proactive. And as I started to think about this business, as I started to think about this consumer change, I think if we're not focused on paying attention to the future, if we're not focused on seeing these clients evolve, I don't think that old model works. And not only do I not think that old model works, I think a lot of advisors are going to be left in the dust, are trying to react when, and frankly, it may be already too late. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the things that we had asked about, some of the things we talked about, we started to do a follow-up paper. So about maybe 6 weeks ago or so, we launched the follow-up paper to advisory firms of 2030. And in that paper, what we did was we profiled six advisors that were growing quickly, but they were growth by specialization. So if the first paper was called Advisory Firms of 2030, The Innovation Imperative, this one was called Advisory Firms of 2030, Growth Through Specialization. And what we wanted to do in that paper is really kind of dig in and to say, here's an example of, five advisors who are focused on very specific niches, how they've broadened their services to just those niches. And they're doing a very good job of, whether it's content marketing, whether it's using technology, whether it's growing their business by specializing on a specific area rather than being a generalist. And their clientele is reaching out to them from all around the country, because what are we doing? We're going out and we're searching for advice. We're searching for something with a specific need. These five advisors have created niches that are now finding themselves being sought out from clients around the country.
So what are planners doing now to prepare their businesses for the future?
Well, I mean, what we suggest they do versus what they're doing is a little different. What we suggest that they do is start looking beyond just being tactical. Think about horizons longer than 12 months. You know, one of the things that those eight firms that we talked about at the beginning, those specialist advisory firms, those progressive advisory firms, they all had a very clear-cut value proposition. They knew what their value proposition was. They knew how it resonated with their target audience. And if we think about increasing AUM as a goal that we have, think about, does that value proposition resonate today with your target audience? And will it resonate down the road with your target audience? What I can tell you personally is that the investment side of this business is becoming more and more commoditized every single day. The ability for one manager to outperform another manager over a 20-year period is relatively negligible. The ability for you to be a specialist in the investment side of the business is very negligible today, because there's so much competition and so many different products that are out there. So the investment side of our business is becoming more and more commoditized. Frankly, the planning side of our business is becoming more and more commoditized as well. You can find firms that are doing basic, generic, general financial planning. They may take offense to that. but you can find basic generalist financial planning for 30 basis points from one firm for $300 a month subscription fee from another firm. So that general financial planning and that general investment management is pretty commoditized. Where if you want to charge a premium, if you do have actual value, you're going to have to focus on being a specialist. You're going to have to focus on having a value proposition that is going to clearly resonate with your target audience. So we start with first looking beyond the tactics and think longer than 12 months. We then move in to say, what are you waiting for? Actually sit down and do a plan. What does that 10-year strategic plan look like to shift away from being a generalist to a specialist? And how do you anticipate the client needs? And how do you attract younger clients? Most of the firms that we talked about really paid no attention to the millennials, which is a much bigger market, frankly, than the baby boom generation. We talked a lot about segmentation in the papers. Segmentation to me is adapting to client needs based on their experiences rather than what you want to deliver. So by focusing on a niche, and we even created a tool, a persona worksheet. A persona worksheet is maybe coming up with a hypothetical or an ideal client, one that you can dig into, one that you can understand what that client's needs are, what their wants are, what the implications are for planning, the implications are for servicing, the implications for pricing with those types of personas. You can also use those personas for marketing. In fact, one of the people that we profiled in the growth paper has created, I think, what she called the retiring Ricardos and the saving Sarahs. So she put together these profiles, these people, and she's target marketing to those types of people. We talk a lot about assessing the technology needs. You know, if you think about the technology needs, this is where I'm really seeing advisors having to step up today instead of by 2030 and look at the way that you're doing more with less. Think about the gaps in the technology suite. Think about what you need to achieve scale. When we think about human resources, when we think about staffing, when we think about people, this is a business by specialization that we're going to actually be able to streamline some of the services that we provide because we're doing it over and over again. But we're now dealing with a client that may be in California or New York or Texas or Minnesota or somewhere other than where we are. So think about the technology and think about the uses of technology and incorporate that technology plan into your strategic plan. I think ultimately, it comes down to really listening more to your clients, understanding whether you create an advisory board, a focus group, some sort of client survey, but look at what they are attracted to or admire with regard to the service model that you deliver. Maybe even go outside of the gate and say, what other service business out there do you appreciate and why? What are they doing to keep you loyal? What are they doing to the fact that you're paying a premium for? So if we listen more to the clients, I think we're going to have the ability to understand what they're looking for and create our service model around that. Hopefully that kind of makes sense. I know I'm going pretty quick here.
Right. So how do you see this working in the future for how planners will handle human resources and technology issues?
Well, you know, in our surveys that we looked at, most of the advisors that we talked to are looking for a fully bundled solution. They want one that has integration between, for example, the CRM, the financial planning software, and the custodial platform. Unfortunately, we say we want that, but we look around the industry and there's so many desperate systems that are out there that people are buying without really having a technology plan based onto it. They're not looking at how it's going to impact my workflows, how it's going to impact the service model that I deliver, how it's going to impact my staff, how it's going to impact the delivery of value that I have, and how my clients are going to interact with that. So I think one of the first things when I think about technology is to understand, do I have a technology stack or do I have a technology pile? And really do a technology audit on your business. Again, I think in today's environment, we're all forced to figure out, does that technology stack work? And is it something that all flows? So I think this coming out of this recent challenge that many of us are in, I think one of the first things that advisors are going to do is they're going to come back and they say, okay, the system that I had over the 30 days or 45 days, God forbid any longer, self-quarantine or isolation that I've had, what were the pros and the cons of the solution that I have? And I think if we think about that now, we think about that 30 days from now, we now start to develop a plan around how we're going to integrate technology down the road. Again, I think it's very important that we understand from the client's perspective as well as the advisor's perspective. On the HR side, you know, there's more advisors that are CFPs over the age of 70 that are under the age of 30. But I think you're going to start to see a little bit more consolidation in the business today. And you have to figure, are you going to be acquiring or are you going to be acquired? What does that do to the staff? One of the things that we found from the growth by specialization side of our paper was that many of the advisors who are focused on this niche or focused on the specialization can actually have a better streamlined process for their business. They can create a system that allows them to do more repetitive tasks and even think, almost read the minds of their clients. You know, if I have an existing client that looks like all my other clients, I can tell them what's going to happen in their future. I can tell them that about 58 years old, they're going to start thinking about, do I have enough and am I ready for retirement? I can tell you that if I have a large part of my net worth, for example, in employee stock options or something to that effect, that I'm going to have to worry about AMT and I'm going to have to worry about other types of solutions. So by becoming more of that specialist, you can streamline your back office, you can create it more efficient, you can incorporate technology, you can create a better solution for the existing clients that you have. But I think there's going to be a lot of waves in that. The one caution, though, that I see is that advisors that are thinking about acquiring businesses, you know, if we there's a lot of challenges that I've seen when we acquire the wrong business. So by doing your due diligence,
no kidding.
But by looking at the types of clients that you're acquiring,
puts it lightly, my friend.
Does it fit? Right.
Yeah.
But does it fit into the system that I already have? And I see, you know, rather than buying the whole business, why not buy a portion? Why not buy the, if I'm focused exclusively on executives and professionals, why not just buy that portion of the business? And I think it's a much better solution for themselves.
Mm-hmm. So what will a culture of innovation look like 10 years from now?
Well, I think that's a great question. Most of the people that they think about innovation, they think about acquiring more technology. When they think about technology, they think about ways to increase their technology budget or to buy another gadget. You know, I'm fortunate that I have a lot of hindsight here. I started in the business back in 1985, and I remember in the 80s and people were focused on product mainly around tax shelter. In the 90s, it was the internet was going to change everything that we see and all sorts of different funds and tech and products that were coming out in the 90s and the 2000s. And today I look around and I go to a lot of conferences and it seems like every other one is a tech vendor that's got this wowable product that's out there. And I think we're buying technology today without knowing the impact of the technology that we already own. So to me, a culture of innovation is one that thinks about the future of the experience with the client, not the product that they can buy. I think the culture of innovation is one that can change to morph into what the client's looking for, frankly, sometimes before they even know what they're looking for. I think it's one that focuses on increasing awareness. It's content marketing. It's developing a service for the client that they have to have, not that the commodity that they were told they should have.
So where does the consumer come in here with all of this? Will consumers adapt to digital tools? I remember I wrote this blog on, like, will Amazon be the next wealth management force? And it was, you know, really kind of perplexing for some people to think about, because I don't know where financial advisors get this idea, but a lot of them have the idea that their clients don't use technology. I think it's a big wake up call. No, but they do. Like, they'll say this, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it's because, I think, to be honest with you, it's just a reflection of how they feel about themselves, because I will do like blogs or whatever, and I'll get these advisors that want to like print out the blog, write out their comments, and then scan it back over email. It's like, use track changes, dude. Like, learn how technology works. You know, so I feel like it's almost like the excuse of like, well, my clients won't, you know, will never use a digital financial planning tool. If I, you know, they would never communicate over social media. Like, I think that's kind of a reflection of how they feel about it, not necessarily how the client feels. So, but that is a question. Will these consumers adapt to digital tools, or is it always going to be a paper ridden industry?
So the analogy that I like to give is, if you would have gone 15 years ago and you would have gone to taxi drivers around the US and you said, what can I do to create a better experience? They would have talked about the vehicle. They would have talked about making things a little easier for them. What they didn't talk about was a ride sharing app that allowed me to pay via credit card, that allowed to track where the driver was, to monitor the system, to split the fares with somebody else and make life dramatically easier. If you talk to real retailers, whether it was at a store or a mall, and you would have said, what do I need to do to make my increase my sales? You would have talked about parking, and you would have talked about getting the latest fashions or whatever it is. What they didn't talk to is with the consumer. I like sitting in my office at home shopping online. I don't want to go to a mall. I haven't used a taxi cab in probably 5 years because it's just that much easier. So what do I think about the future, and will the consumers? The consumers already moving with their feet. They're already seeing millions and hundreds of millions of dollars go into the robo-esque advisors. Now, I still think there's going to be some human interaction. So I don't call them robo-advisors as much as I call them virtual advisors. It's leveraging technology to make it easier to communicate with your clients. But I think the true robos haven't really done as well as the ones that we call the virtual advisors, the ones that still have a human. But, you know, if I'm a little bit more wealthy than a lot of the existing, how do I position this? If I'm a little wealthier than the average client of these virtual advisors, I'm probably going to still want to talk to the same person rather than a 1-800 call number for my CFP or my planner. What I'm probably going to want to do is I want to incorporate a personal touch with all the technology. And it's very, very easy to do these days. It's just understanding what the client's looking for. Will the client move towards this? They're moving now, and they're moving very, very fast. So what we need to do is we need to make sure as advisors that we can incorporate the technology to allow the consumer to have what they want when they want it. But when it comes to the real individual personalized advice, that specialization is going to be key, because I'm going to be typing in not what does a middle-aged retiree look for. I'm going to say, what does a middle-aged junior executive with equity compensation and college education plan? I'm going to start profiling exactly what I'm looking for and see who else is out there. Mm-hmm. And Google's empowering that. And all of the search engines are making it easier for me to find the people that I want to talk to for the solutions that I need.
Mm-hmm. All right, John. Well, listen, I think we should probably wrap now, given that everyone has to get back to watching the news and panicking about the markets. So it's like, I'm not trying to make a joke out of it, but it's like, it's just crazy everything right now. So I don't want to take too much longer, John, but sincerely, I wanted to thank you. Is there any way that people can get a hold of the report that you've mentioned in this call?
Sure, of course. The easiest way to get a hold of it is really go to the SEI website, which is SEIC.com, and just type in advisory firms 2030. You'll be more, there'll be a couple of different places that you can go to find it. It's in our knowledge center. It's easy to download. It's free. So we'll be more than happy to have that out for anybody that wants to read it.
Right. Okay. Thank you so much. And so how can people get in touch with you if they have more questions?
Well, that'd be great. The same website, SEIC.com, or my email address is very easy. It's janderson, A-N-D-E-R-S-O-N, @SEIC.com.
Or you can just find him on LinkedIn, everybody, since I hope you've been listening to all LinkedIn. Of my other podcasts, and you know that I love LinkedIn. If you know anything about this podcast.
LinkedIn, Twitter.
Right. Get him on LinkedIn, okay?
There
my
you go.
Preference. All right, John. Thank you so much, everybody. Please subscribe to the show, and we will see you next time.